James, do we have any idea what the Fed and what the central banks of the world are really doing today?
Unfortunately, we do. Well, thank you for having me on again, Dr. Stan. And before we start today, I just want to mention that my father is in town visiting me, visiting his grandson for the first time here in Japan. And we were talking the other day, and he just wanted to express what a big fan of his, of yours that he is and how much he enjoyed Brotherhood of Darkness. So you've got another fan elsewhere in the world.
God bless. That makes my day. Thank you so much. Just go right ahead.
Excellent. Well, yes, unfortunately, the central banks of the world, as we've talked about on the program for the last several months, really are dictating the way in which the economy is going in so many different ways. And we can see this. We always get little indications of this in various sectors of the economy. And one that's popped up in recent weeks has been the UK housing bubble that's coming into view right now. And we're seeing this just really exploding all over the UK. Even in places where the economy is not doing so well, we're seeing house prices just exploding year on year, even in the Northeast, up 2.3% year on year, the Northwest, 2.2%. And in London, things are just getting absolutely insane. In fact, we saw a 10% house price rise in London in the past month. And all of this is directly, we can pin this directly on the central banks and the things that they're doing, not only in the UK, but all around the world, that's leading people to buy into these housing bubbles rather than try to avoid them, because the cash has to go somewhere, and housing is one of the places it always tends to end up. So we're starting to see this happening, and this is just one indicator of how the central banks are really dominating the economy in this day and age.
But basically, of course, the money is being created out of nothing. Isn't an awful lot of this money they're creating out of nothing coming from our own central bank, the Fed?
Yes, it is. It certainly is. They create it, and then they use it to buy up mortgage-backed securities and treasuries and other such things.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment.
While the storm clouds gather.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett. He's over in Japan. He is, of course, one of the chief writers for the International Forecaster. Since Bob Chapman has passed away, and I think Bob had picked James to replace him. He knew he was going to die, and so he got James, and James writes the editorial every week, or actually twice a week, because he publication comes out on Wednesday and Saturday, always fascinating. And James is simply talking about the housing bubble that's taking place in England. Why is there a housing bubble? Because there's an excess of money. Where is the money coming from? It's being created out of nothing by our central banks, by the American central banks, working with the central banks over in Europe, but they're all working in concert. And, of course, the bigger the bubble gets, of course, the more the greater catastrophe it's going to be when the whole house of cards comes down. Pick up the story, James.
Well, you're exactly right about that. And to just some more perspective on what's happening in the UK specifically, in fact, the Cameron government has recently launched an initiative known as Help to Buy, in which the UK government is actually going to serve to guarantee any home loan for any new home buyers. As long as they have a 5% deposit. So as long as you put 5% down on any property up to £600,000, which is $1.2 million, the government will guarantee it, which in the face of an already rising property market in the UK is just absolutely begging for a bubble. And I think we're going to see housing prices in the UK becoming even more crazy in the coming months and years. And in fact, we've seen predictions of the euro on your housing price increase move from 2% on the year to 6%. So we're already seeing the effects of this government intervention. And then couple that with the central bank effect, all of this quantitative easing, which is also looking, finding money, which is looking for somewhere to go. And people are looking at what happened in Cyprus, where the central banks came in and just basically took a portion of everyone's savings. So now everyone is looking for assets to sink their money into. And what better place than a prime real estate property in central London, where prices are just absolutely exploding right now?
What about sort of the housing bubble here in the United States? Certainly, we've had a fairly marked increase in housing prices here in America as a result of the action of our privately owned central bank. What's going to be happening in America? Is that bubble still continue to inflate?
It is at the moment. It is still slowly inflating, and I think that it will be for the near future. And
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Bob's been talking about James Corbett has been talking about what's going on over in England, where a housing bubble is being fomented by the central bank there in England, which of course works very closely with our central bank, which is creating all sorts of money. We don't know what they're doing. Everything's done in secret. Why? Because it's a privately owned bank. Well, most people, of course, think this is an extension of our government. It is not. The Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express is. But the average individual doesn't understand, and they made it intentionally confusing. And certainly, I think that Professor Quigley, who in writing in his book Tragedy and Hope back in 1966, talks about how these central banks work in concert throughout the world, and they're the real controlling force working behind the scenes. And I believe that's absolutely true. Certainly, James is talking about what's going on here in America. And although we've had a bubble here, a housing bubble resurgence, and it's all related to the fact that the Federal Reserve is buying over $40 billion worth of mortgage bonds every single month, pouring all sorts of money into the housing market. But one of these days, when this house of cards comes down, why you don't want to be there, certainly holding a mortgage, or certainly having bought an expensive property that suddenly is worth nowhere near what you paid for it. And once again, we'll see, I believe, what we saw in 2008. What are your thoughts, James?
Well, unfortunately, I do agree with that assessment. And just another brick that we can add to this wall that we're constructing here to show the housing bubble as a result of the central bank policies. In fact, we just had one of the top Federal Reserve officials. We had Dallas Fed President Richard Fisher come out to say that not only is he seeing signs of a housing bubble, but also warning about the Federal Reserve's ongoing purchases of mortgage-backed securities. So we actually have a Fed official coming out and basically going against the party line and saying what the kind of disastrous situation that the Federal Reserve itself is creating with its open-ended purchases of mortgage-backed securities to the tune of $40 billion per month. Again, this is a disastrous policy that is the direct result of the disastrous policies that have gone before. And as we know, in the wake of the 2008 collapse, basically the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government decided to double down and just inflate the bubble even further. So now even the Dallas Fed president is coming out and admitting there is a housing bubble going on in the United States right now. It's developing, and he's warning about the possible effects of this. And unfortunately, as we know, Obama has appointed Janet Yellen to be Ben Bernanke's successor when he steps down in January, which is going to basically not only continue Bernanke's policies, but perhaps even extend them out even further, as Yellen is known as a bit of a monetary dove, as someone who wants to not only continue doing this quantitative easing to infinity, but perhaps even step it up a couple of notches. So we're going to see really the end result of this in a few years when this really starts to unravel. And I don't want to see the results of it, but hopefully the people who are listening to this program won't be left holding the bag with overinflated property or with useless Federal Reserve notes, which are likely to be turned into toilet paper sooner rather than later.
Well, I was talking to the president of a local bank recently who told me that sitting here in even a relatively conservative area where I live, very secluded from the rest of the big markets, but there are so many people who are holding mortgages that are simply underwater. In other words, they have a mortgage on a piece of property, and the piece of property is not worth anywhere near what that mortgage is listed at. In other words, basically, they're holding a piece of property that certainly has nowhere near the value that The bank is loaned, the banks are concerned, the people are concerned. And as a bank manager, there's nothing she can do about it. One of these days, if they can't keep up their payments, they're eventually going to have to, the bank will have to foreclose on them. And basically, I think that most people really don't understand. An awful lot of people are having financial problems. It's only one reason, because the bank, the price of homes is going up here in the United States. Correct me if this is wrong, James, but I've heard that the Chinese are coming in. They've got all these dollars. They want to get out of the dollars because they don't trust the dollars. And they're coming in here and they're buying up factories and they're buying up industrial plants and they're buying up even housing. And a lot of housing is being bought up, and apartment houses are being bought up here in the United States by the Chinese to get out of the dollar. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I know that the Chinese certainly are making a lot of overseas investments, and in fact, a lot of them are related to gold mining. The Chinese government is investing quite a bit in mining operations around the world, and in fact, also domestically, to the point where they are now the world's largest gold producer, mining an estimated 440 tons of it every year. So they've definitely been concentrating on that area, and in fact, that's not just a government boom. That's also a boom that's happening in the general public. And in fact, the annualized rate of gold buying from the first 8 months of this year is 2,600 tons amongst the general public in China, which is more than the entire annual production of mined gold in the world, aside from China. So China itself, single-handedly, just the people there, are now buying as much gold as is mined in the entire world every year, which is a pretty staggering figure when you think about it. And that is directly, I think, due to all of the craziness that they see that's happening in the dollar. Because once again, I think once this the plug is really pulled, it is going to be a bloodbath for anyone who's left holding U.S. dollars. And this is something that China is particularly sensitive to as the largest foreign creditor of the United States, the largest holder of U.S. treasuries other than the Federal Reserve, with $1.2 trillion worth. I think they're very sensitive to what's happening with the U.S. dollar. And that is exactly why they are concluding trade deal after trade deal after trade deal in local currencies, in bilateral agreements that have nothing to do with the U.S. dollar. They are getting themselves off of the dollar bit by bit by bit. And the gold buying is definitely a part of that, that factors into that equation. And in fact, when you look at the broader BRICS, the so-called BRICS countries of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, all of those countries are adding to their gold reserves, with Russia and China adding quite a bit. And of course, India always a strong buyer of gold. So I think we are moving closer and closer to that point where we are going to see the recapitalization of the world financial system, whether by engineered some sort of engineered deal or whether just by default, because in the long run, the dollar will be unsustainable. Either way, I think we are moving towards a system where, as one commentator that I was reading put it, basically the IPO of the new global financial system, the initial public offering, is going to be the equity is going to be gold. Basically, you're going to buy into the new financial system with gold. And that's a metaphor, of course, but I think it's an apt one, because we really are seeing a lot of these countries, these developing economies that are increasingly becoming the lion's share of the global economy, really are focusing on gold. And we're seeing that not just amongst the governments, but amongst the people as well.
Well, of course, with all of these people, certainly in China and in India and elsewhere, buying gold, and obviously there's not an overabundance of gold, where's all the gold coming from? Why is the price of gold going up? Why has the price of gold dropped? Well, I think it's up a little, almost $1,320 today, something like that. But it was down to $1,200 within the last 2 weeks. Is this all manipulation?
Well, in a word, yes. I think we have to understand that, once again, that the price of gold on a daily basis is just getting even more crazy than it has been in the past. And I think the only way we can really understand that is to say that it isn't gold that is gaining and losing value in these huge dips and spikes on a day-to-day basis. It is the dollar, which is really the unpredictable part of that equation. So we see that, that for example, as you mentioned, we had gold down to 1250 just a little while ago. It's now up around 13, 14. Earlier, it was almost brushing $1,400 just a month or two ago. So we're starting to see these huge dips and spikes occurring on a regular basis. And again, rather than volatility in gold, which has basically maintained its relative value for thousands of years, I think we can see the incredible volatility that's happening in the dollar system right now, where every single event that comes along, the government shutdown or the potential invasion of Syria or all of these things that come along, are having huge effects on destabilizing the markets, because the markets know that basically it's not any longer to do with the underlying productive economy. It's nothing to do with whether or not this or that company is doing well. So much is now riding on whether the Federal Reserve will continue pumping money into the system or whether the U.S. government is going to default on its debt, that basically that is the overriding factor in economic analyses right now. And that's very worrying, I think, to anyone who understands history and understands that in times where the entire world economy, I mean, we're really in a type of unique situation where the entire world economy is based so much on what is happening at specifically at the central bank and in Washington, D.C., that it puts the entire global financial recovery, quote unquote, on the line simply at the whims of the politicians and the central bankers. And I think we can all understand that that is not a sustainable system, and that's not one that we want to be involved in any way that we can remove ourselves from it is for the good.
But basically, this leads to a healthy economy, basically, because we have a lot of major corporations all working in concert, as they always have, with interlocking boards of directorates of a very, very small number of people really running things behind the scenes. But basically, because it's such an artificial economy, and increasingly production is being moved out of the United States as we design our tax laws to encourage the corporations to move out. As you move out of America, where you don't have to pay, you don't have to pay American corporate taxes. You pay your taxes overseas at 3 or 4%. Would you rather be here and pay 30%, 35% income tax, corporate tax? Move overseas, and of course, everything is done to force the companies to leave this country. We harass them here. And as a result, more and more companies are moving overseas, more and more jobs are moving overseas, more and more wealth is moving overseas. And little by little, I fear we're going to see a gradually lowering of the living standards of the American people. We've already almost doubled the number of people on food stamps during this last 6 or 7 years, and it's only going to get worse. We'll be back in a moment. Well, James, of course, the thing is that we seem to, here in the United States, we're getting more and more people used to their entitlements. We used to call it charity. We don't call it a charity or welfare anymore. It's entitlements. And we have certainly almost 48 million Americans on food stamps. And basically, of course, we have 100 million Americans. Maybe there's an overlap there, but almost 100 million Americans either on Medicare or Medicaid. How long can we keep spending money we don't have?
Well, basically, until they pull the plug on this party that they're doing, or until the plug is pulled for them. And as we've mentioned before, once the interest rates start to get out of control on the U.S. debt, that's when things are going to go south in a very sharp way. And as we know right now, basically the number one factor that's keeping those interest rates down is the Federal Reserve and the money that they're pumping into the system. And that is exactly what's allowed the U.S. government to continue printing its debt out into oblivion as much as they want, or as much as the debt ceiling wranglers will allow them to. Because, again, they can issue new debt basically until the cows come home, as long as there are people willing to buy that debt up. And even as more and more players at the global table are starting to back away from the U.S. dollar and U.S. treasuries, the Federal Reserve is stepping up to the plate to buy it for them. So we've seen this maintenance of the U.S. treasury Treasury's ability to put this debt, to issue this debt. But I think as people are becoming more and more aware that this is being propped up by the Federal Reserve, we're seeing more and more people getting, well, shall we say, restless about U.S. Treasuries. And again, that is basically the time limit on how long this can all last. As long as people are still willing to buy up U.S. government debt, then they can still continue doing this as long as they want. But once that starts to dry up and the interest rates start shooting up, well, that's going to be a huge, huge, huge bill to pay, literally and figuratively, because, of course, we're talking about a $17 trillion debt now, and just the debt servicing on that is pretty mind-boggling in and of itself. And once we see those interest rates spiking, that's going to be a huge sign that things are coming to an end. But apparently we shouldn't worry, because I was just watching a CFR member Fareed Zakaria's program recently, and he was talking to Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein at, of all places, the Clinton Global Initiative Summit. And he was assuring people, Blankfein was assuring the American public that America is in a great stage of recovery because the U.S. has that can-do spirit, which is his way of saying, thank you so much for bailing out Goldman Sachs to the tune of trillions of dollars, and thank you for all that money, even as we imploded the economy. And don't worry, because you guys are great, and you'll continue to lift us out of this problem. And for anyone who knows about Goldman Sachs or its history, I think they should be affronted by the idea of Blankfein thanking them for the recovery.
Well, I share your concern. I just think that it's not a matter of if, but when this whole house of cards comes down. The tragedy is that the average American cannot believe it's going to happen. Things have always gotten straightened out before. Well, we've had problems in the past. We had this terrible problem in 2008, but the Fed was able to solve that problem. But the difficulty is that we did not have the level of debt in 2008 that we have today. We had far less than $10 trillion in debt. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and suddenly James was just saying that suddenly borrowing money, and things seem to be going along fine. We seem to be getting out of our problems, but I was just pretty confident that the average American thinks this is simply going to be able to go on forever. They got us out of the mess we were in 2008. But people have forgotten that certainly in 2008, in fact, when Barack Hussein Obama became president, the national debt was $10.7 trillion. Today, as I speak, it is over $17 trillion. Barack Hussein Obama has not quite, but almost doubled from $10 to $17 trillion the national debt. And you can't keep spending other people's money. Eventually, of course, there's no more money to spend. And the interest rates go up, and you've got to pay interest on all of this. And eventually, at some point, sooner or later, I think it's only a matter of time, before the House of Cards comes tumbling down. James, you pick up the story.
Well, I think you said it quite well there. And of course, the debt is only one factor in this equation. The other factor, of course, is the interest. And where is the interest ultimately going? This is a question that I get sometimes through my website, and I just put out a video in which I attempted to answer some of those questions. But one of the questions that a lot of people have about the national debt is, well, who owns this debt? Who is the U.S. government actually in debt to? And there's basically a few main factors in that equation of that $17 trillion debt. And in fact, the largest factor is the government itself. The government actually issues certain types of non-marketable treasuries in order to fund various programs, including Social Security, which now in and of itself accounts for $2.7 trillion of that debt. That's a staggering sum of money that basically the government owes to itself. So this is not only basically they're writing checks with IOUs that are drawn from the public and the public's willingness to back that debt, but they're actually writing checks to themselves to fund the programs, which they then pay out to the people who are themselves funding the programs. It's a bizarre, as you say, it's a house of cards, and it's going to fall, and it's a bizarre system in and of itself. So, of course, this is unsustainable. And unfortunately, I think that this was engineered to be unsustainable. I don't think that this is the people who are really puppeteering this system. I don't think it will come as any shock to them that this is happening or that we're reaching this stage of basically crisis. crisis, because unfortunately, this is exactly the way the system has been meant to function. And as you were indicating earlier, basically, we are in an age where it is now the age of social security and social safety nets and all of these. And the idea of charity, of people actually coming together to help each other out during hard times, has basically been erased and effaced from the idea of American society, much to their detriment, because now it people look at each other and they think, well, the government will take care of that. There ought to be a government program for this. What can the government do? Rather than looking at a problem in their community and saying, what can I do about this problem? That's a fundamental shift that's occurred, and that I think the importance of which can't be overemphasized, because basically this makes everyone into dependents, vassals of the U.S. government, rather than people who see each other as parts, vital parts of their community, and people that they want to help out on an individual basis. And the more we become beholden to the U.S. government, the more it will continue to grow and grow and grow and grow, and the more effect it will continue to have on people's lives, to the point where we have these Obamacare-type deals and other things which are threatening to completely consume the American economy and scuttle whatever was left of it in the next few years, if and when this starts to really come to pass.
I agree with you, Shota, but if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 464-8295. But basically, because we keep saying this week after week, but I think people have to understand that we're being lied to. I think the one person that out there who I think that you better listen to is the president of the Federal Reserve Bank from Dallas, because he is certainly warning out there, just like us. He's warning that we are certainly in a building that's on fire, and he's shouting fire, and nobody wants to hear it. But you can't continue doing what we're doing. In fact, I said that even Alan Greenspan is writing a new book. It'll be out very, very shortly. And he's talked about the disastrous course we're on. Of course, he designed most of this. He knows exactly what's going on. I have my own opinions of Alan Greenspan. He's either the greatest trader or the greatest hero of all time. I haven't quite decided which. I think maybe my theory is that he intentionally brought this whole system down, because it was the only way of saving freedom. If we continue going where we're going to be in a fascist society, if the whole thing topples, maybe we can reclaim our nation. But who knows what his motivation was. But I will tell you that Alan Greenspan's policies certainly are the foreshadows of everything going on today. And the vast majority of the people listening to this program, if they've not made preparations, will lose everything they have and own. Well, James, I know you're on all sorts of programs over talking with other people across America. What is the general attitude that you think of the average American? Does the average American really understand what's going on, where this is all going to end up, or the fact that, as Margaret Thatcher says, socialism only works as long as you until you run out of other people's money to spend, or we're rapidly running out of other people's money to spend?
Well, unfortunately, I think there are a lot of people who either don't see or don't want to see the fundamental faults in the system as it exists. But for everyone who doesn't, I'm sure there are many more who do, and more who are learning each and every day. And I say this because I think that the people at large are generally smarter than a lot of people want to give them credit for, and I think people understand when a system is fundamentally designed not to function in their favor, and we see this all from a lot of different perspectives, but I think something that strikes me in particular is the way that for example, we can look at the approval ratings of Congress, which just continue to plummet and reach the single digits at one point, which I think shows that people understand there is a fundamental problem with the way that the society is being organized and the way the government is not doing its job, so to speak. And I think that dissatisfaction doesn't necessarily mean everyone understands in great degrees of detail exactly how this is being done or what's being done, but everyone understands that there is a problem, and people can see this on a day-to-day basis for themselves. They can see the stores closing, they can see the empty stores in the malls, they understand that there is a problem, they can see people around them getting laid off. stuff and people who can't find work. And so, you know, no amount of propaganda can convince people not to believe their lying eyes unless they really, really don't want to. So I think the people are generally smarter than the talking heads and others give them credit for. And they understand that there's something wrong with this system. And hopefully we can help to show them a little bit in a little bit greater clarity what exactly is wrong and what they can do about it.
Well, I think probably the worst thing is this idea that people are entitled to being taken care of by the federal government. There's nothing wrong with Christian charity. There's everything wrong with federal entitlements. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply decrying this concept of entitlements, how we've evolved. One time we had a Christian nation, we had Christian charity, and people who were down were helped until they could get back on their feet and hopefully become productive citizens again. And then, of course, we changed the term from charity to welfare. And basically, well, suddenly it suggested people were being helped. But then, of course, they changed those terms again, because remember, ladies and gentlemen, everything is a matter of perception. And they changed our perception from charity to welfare now to entitlements. People are entitled to be taken care of by the government. Ladies and gentlemen, you're not entitled to anything in a free society. You're entitled to something in a fascist society. And that's exactly what we have today. And nobody wants to talk about what we have is a system by which the government provides for, regulates, and regiments people from the cradle to the grave, which is why they're listening to all of your telephone conversations and recording all of your emails and faxes. They are tracking you with drones. They're tracking you with the facial identification, the software on the cameras that are mounted on every corner. Well, if you have a question or comment for our guest, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I would simply comment that certainly all of this, certainly the tracking of people, has nothing to do with terrorism, because all of these things were in place long before the terrorist attack on September 11th, and the terrorist movement has been funded since its inception from Washington, D.C., and from our own CIA. And if you doubt that, we carry a wonderful book called The Devil's Game. The Devil's Game, and it is. We have Joseph calling from Georgia, but before we go to Joseph, James, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the International Forecaster and subscribe, and then how they get in touch with you and get your such excellent material that you're publishing on your own?
Yes, of course. Well, if people are interested in the International Forecaster, it is a bi-weekly e-newsletter. It comes out on Wednesdays and Saturdays and contains information on economic and financial and political and social matters, generally 30 to 40 pages in each edition. So a lot of information there. I think it's a great resource for people. Of course, it also includes my lead editorial in both editions. So I would recommend it for people. And if you're interested in checking it out, I suggest you go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And you can find some of the previous articles that I've written there up on the website. And you can find out information about how to subscribe. If you would prefer to get that via mail, you can write in P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. And if you're interested in my own work, I am at CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And there you can find all of my media there available for download, audio, video, articles, interviews, podcasts, all sorts of work that I've done over the past 6.5 years now. And it's all there freely available for download. So I hope people will take it and use it as an information resource.
And I think, ladies and gentlemen, if there's ever been a time in your life when you need information, it's now, if you want to survive the very difficult financial times that lie ahead. Well, let's go to Joseph, who's calling us from Georgia. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Joseph, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, just one quick comment and a question. You know, remember when the Chinese was voicing their opinion about our gun rights, saying that we ought to have gun control? And I heard something, I don't know if it's true, I wonder if either one of you had heard anything about it, that, you know, the Chinese had offered to buy more of our debt, but all of these properties they've bought and are going to buy. They want their own security forces to have control over them.
I haven't heard anything at all about that. Have you heard anything at all about that, James?
I haven't heard anything along those lines, no. I've certainly heard that China using their U.S. debt holdings as a type of political threat or that type of thing, but I've never heard anything like that.
And I really wouldn't be too concerned about that. I think that's just a little outlandish. But remember, they're putting out all sorts of false information.
Right.
And I've been around long enough. I remember 50 years ago when the Chinese troops were down there just south of the border in Mexico waiting to come into America. And well, they're probably pretty old by now because they never come. This is all part of the disinformation program they're putting out to confuse us. Anything else, Joseph, before we let you go? Or did you have a question for our guest?
I figured up what gold would be worth a ton and then went in multiples of 10. And actually, if there was like 500,000 tons of gold, it would only be worth like $20 trillion if I done my math right. That's a 1,500 an ounce rounded off. So even if there's a lot of gold, there's still a lot of debt, and especially with derivatives added in, you know, our 17 trillion debt, we got a lot more unfunded liabilities than that, you know, not counting this derivatives, and they claim, oh, we don't know who owns what in a derivative, know if you own money, though.
Well, I think the one thing we can say is the price of gold is being manipulated intentionally down, because if the price of gold goes up, people begin to lose confidence in the dollar. We're involved in a con game. It's a con game, and watch the price of gold and silver, and you'll have an idea what's happening to the economy. God bless. Thanks very much. Let's go quickly to Tony, who's calling from West Virginia. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or in the Central Coast of California, 464-2295. Hi, Tony. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, it's James Corbett. I'm wondering a little bit about this idea of charity versus entitlement programs, you know, or just the idea that the government is involved in subsidizing the poverty of the people around this country when all the jobs have so far, so many have gone outside of this country and so many of our people are in dire straits. I don't see it as practical in the year 2013 that churches would ever be able to pick up this housing load, this food stamp load, this all these other programs that are established right now. It's just not feasible for churches to be able to manage that kind of debt. But there's one thing I wanted to add, too. You know, the Federal Reserve, when they spend out this money, they know that they're lending out a bad debt. They know that they're not going to get the return on interest, but crisis situations exist all over the world, whether it be in Greece or whether it be wherever the financial problems are. And these interlocking directives with the bankers around the world, you know what's going on. The Fed is not in a position where they're letting out these millions and trillions of dollars and thinking that they're giving good loans. They know they're giving bad loans, but it's crisis.
Well, if I can comment on that, I guess I would say that that on the first point with charity versus entitlements, I would say we had charity as the predominant, I think, mode of people's psychological dealing with each other back in the 1930s during the Great Depression. And if it worked then, why doesn't it work now? I think the only reason that we could come up with why 2013 is fundamentally different than what happened in the 1930s is that people have fundamentally shifted their psychological viewpoint to the point where they now see themselves as people who are beholden to the government. So that's what I think is ultimately the problem.
No,
Dr. Stan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And,
I'm here, too.
I'm basically... If you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, back at the time of the Great Depression, Why, of course, people never looked to the federal government. There was never any idea the federal government would provide for people. It was a responsibility, first, of people to provide for themselves, and if they couldn't, then, of course, for the families to provide for them, and then, if they couldn't, for the churches to provide for them. If they couldn't, the local government had that. And basically, every local community had a poor farm where people could go. They had a county hospital where people could go and get free medical care. And these things were taken care of at the local level. And basically, we did not need federal programs. Once, of course, you create a situation where people are entitled, why should anybody go out and work? Why should anybody go out and get a job when you can get suddenly unemployment insurance? Or you can get food stamps? Or you can get medical aid? Certainly when you can get subsidies due for your education are concerned, or you can get disability payments simply by saying that you can't work in case you get a sore back or something. And basically, of course, what they've done is destroy the very soul of our people and the independence of our people, and they've specifically done this with the black community to make them totally dependent upon our government because they hate the blacks. And this is the real thing that's going on today. And the very liberals who supposedly champion the cause of the blacks have destroyed the black family. They used to be very, very strong during the Great Depression, despite the fact there was discrimination against blacks in our community. The black family was strong. Today, over 70% of black kids are born out of wedlock, and suddenly the blacks make up by far the largest percentage of people in our prisons today, almost 50%, over 40% of the people in prisons are black, and that didn't happen by accident. Well, let's quickly go to Annette calling in from West Virginia. Well, we'll go to Annette as soon as we get her passed through. But how would you comment on my remarks, James?
Well, I agree with you completely, and I think we have to understand that whatever is subsidized in an economy is going to grow, and I think that what we've seen subsidized most heavily in the past generation or two is Social Security, is this entitlement benefits and all of this, and that's been one of the largest growth sectors of the economy, if you want to think of it that way, as the government continues to expand. And in that exact regard, I think that basically helps to subsidize the both the mentality and the reality of people becoming more and more dependent on that system, so that food stamps, etc., become the norm for more and more people who then have no incentive to get off of that system, because it's not like you're actually getting help from your neighbors who can only do so much for you and who obviously are interested in seeing you develop beyond that stage, but you're getting it from some nameless, faceless government entity. So there's really no incentive whatsoever to actually get beyond that system. I think it creates an entire psychology that creates in people the exact wrong idea, and once again detaches people from their community and those around them, who in the event of an actual real crisis are the ones that I think we should be turning to, not the government itself. So yes, I agree with what you're saying there completely.
And let me just point out that the big problem in my way of thinking is the fact that we do not have the corporate jobs we used to. Why? Because they've designed the corporate tax structure so that if you keep your corporation in America, why are you going to be paying a 35% corporate tax? If you move overseas, you pay 5% maybe, if that much. And basically, it is to people's advantage to move their corporations overseas along with the jobs. And there are less and less jobs here in America. What we need are tariffs in America. What we need is a tax structure that encourages people to keep their corporations here. What we need certainly is to do away with government regulations so industries can open here so they're not harassed. When people try to form a business here and get the government off of people's back and lease the initiative of the American people, then we wouldn't have a problem. And let's go to Annette, who's calling us from West Virginia. Annette, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, good evening, gentlemen. I must say, amen to everything that I've heard, even though I just tuned into the program. What I feel is very significant is that when they took God out of education and our national life, over a period of time, we have allowed corruption to reach such levels of death that years ago, even in the 40s, was certainly up to the 40s. Corporations, even though they were corporations, they still maintained a PR status among the people that they considered that their interests were to promote the interests of the American people. But now they are blatantly opposed to the interest. They're owned by people who have a different mentality, a different belief system, and they don't care about the interests of the American people. In other words, there's no relationship between the ownership of the corporations and the United States.
Okay, fine. Let's get on, James. How would you respond to what Annette is saying, James?
Well, unfortunately, I have to agree completely. I think there's always been corruption of various forms, but there's no doubt that the corruption is much, much more rampant now and much more in your face. I think they're not even trying to hide it as much as they would have in generations past. And again, that is a sign of just how thoroughly our society has been engineered to the point where people see that sort of mentality of take everything you can for yourself and who cares about the person next to you. That has been engineered into the general population to the point where when they see that happening in levels of high government office or in the big banks or wherever this type of corruption happens, they just see that as normal human behavior. And again, I think we have to denaturalize that. We have to make it so we understand that this is not the way communities are supposed to be. It's not the way they have to be. And traditionally, it's not the way they have been organized. And we can do better than this. And we have to start shaking people out of that conditioning that it's just every man for himself and take what you can while you can, because ultimately I think we understand where that leads us as a society, and it's not in a positive direction.
And Annette, you're absolutely right about the spiritual component to it. America was great because America was good, but America will cease to be great when America ceases to be good and we are no longer a good nation, we're no longer a Christian nation, and this is really the basis of what's going on today. And as Thomas Jefferson said, you've heard me say it before, and I'll say it again, God who gave his life gave his liberty, but can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect God is just. His justice will not sleep forever. And I think we're about to see God's justice on America, Annette. All we can do is continue talking. I hope you get everybody there in West Virginia listening to our programs.
I have another comment.
Okay, go right ahead.
With reference to the fact that we are allowing foreigners to now own our buildings and our land and roads, and China has bought the Chase Manhattan building in New York City, which has 90 feet underground and 6 layers of floors, where with marble. And so what my understanding is that that's where they are keeping their gold now. I remember in 9/11, that day I just happened to be tuned in. They, as soon as building 1 and 2 went down, they started taking the gold out of building 7.
Okay, we're out of time. God bless, but I share your concern about what's going on. We're in real trouble because we've abandoned God. God bless you. Thanks so much. Well, James, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. You go right ahead.
Well, I'm not sure how to wrap up what we were saying today other than just to reiterate all of the points we've been making and how this is an engineered problem that has come into view because of both the political machinations and the central bank machinations, but also, as we've been talking about, the societal manipulations that's been going on to try to engineer the public to accept where we have come to as a society. And I think we have to fight against that conditioning and start to take care of each other rather than to wait for the government to handouts to help take care of us, or to bicker over which party should control those government handouts, because I think that is ultimately not going to be the solution to this problem. And then just to pick up from what Annette was saying there about the gold as it relates to 9/11, I think that's one of the important and often overlooked aspects of what really happened on 9/11, is not just the gold, which was there in the World Trade Center complex, $1.7 billion worth of it, but also the various ways that that money was involved in what happened that day, from the insurance on the buildings, which ultimately resulted in a $4.6 billion payout to leaseholder Larry Silverstein, to the insider trading, which has been confirmed statistically by business journals and the like, which have done statistical analyses of that, to the hard drives of the 9/11 companies, which showed that hundreds of millions of dollars in anomalous transactions were taking place in during the minutes of the attack. So there's a lot of financial aspects to what happened on 9/11 that are absolutely vital for people to look into, to come to an understanding of what was really happening that morning and why it was really happening. But on that note, I think we'll have to leave it there, because that's a whole other topic of conversation. But Dr. Stan, I always appreciate you having me on to talk about this.
Well, we always enjoy having you, and please extend my best wishes to your dad, and tell him I'm just so glad he enjoyed our book. It was a wonderful adventure to have written that book, and I just great to know that people are actually out there. They're listening to our conversations, and I hope your dad is listening on a weekly basis on Monday, and I'll have you on as long as I'm available and you're available.
Excellent. Really, well, I'm looking forward to it again in the future, and I'll let him know. Thank you so much for having me on.